right. The time is 7 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. A very good morning to you, and welcome to another edition of the Early Morning Scoop on your favorite radio station, or rather talk radio station, that is Eagle FM. And I'm your host, Loisa Shimi. I'm pleased to have you every day staying with us from now until the last program. We really appreciate your staying with us, your tuning in. We really appreciate you, whether you are, whether you're tuning in from, the app or whether the website. We really appreciate you, your contribution. And, of course, on this particular segment, we speak about, we look at the entrepreneurship side of the updates. We're looking at the trade policy. We're looking at the discussion of the economic affairs. That's what we do until the hour of 7:30. But before we jump into the latest economic update from across Africa, please do not forget to connect with us as usual, or with us, share our platforms. That is Eagle FM Namibia. You find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And of course, the Village newspaper page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And of course, do not forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update. And of course, the alert of our, or rather about our newspaper. And like today, the newspaper is out. Please don't forget to subscribe. What you can do is just to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel. That is Eagle Media House, Eagle Media House, and you can able to get the newspaper every day's release. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And do not again forget to download our app, the very important app that you need to have in your phone, so that you can at least catch up where you missed out on the program. We have all the podcasts lined up for you to go listen. And of course, you can only do that when you download the app, or maybe from the website, and you can able to rather tune in, whether it's a live program or rather the podcast. And do not forget again to download the Imba app, and you can able to have your Imba app in your phone. To start off internationally, is that the Uganda is seeing a shift as dwindling aid and, of course, fading global attention push refugees to adapt, survive, and, of course, build new lives independently in these cities. Now, the Uganda Human Rights Commission says of 7 March, Uganda has now 1.83 million refugees within its borders. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Uganda are taking a different path. They're leaving rural settlements to start a new life in Uganda's cities. CGTN's Michael Baleke reports.
On the busy streets of Kampala, Dushime Celia walks with purpose. Toolbox in hand, grace on her overalls. She's not a visitor here. She's a mechanic and a refugee from Burundi. Every day, she reports to this garage, rolls up her sleeves and gets to work under the hood.
Sergeant Gordon.
UNHCR brought in an opportunity for young refugees to join those who want to train in mechanics. So I gave in my they asked for our school results. So I gave in my senior 4-pass slip. And another chance that I got, I was the only lady in that program. I managed to pass through. In the training, I found it more interesting. I loved it so much, and I decided to continue with this. So this is how I started becoming a professional mechanic.
Celia is one of thousands of refugees quietly settling in Uganda's cities, living outside official systems and often invisible to aid agencies.
According to the policies regarding to refugees, they are free to move, to make a small business, and earn something. I'm here for 15 years, and when you are a hard-working person, you cannot die with hunger. You make businesses. Even the government of Uganda is helping you, facilitating you to give you the license to work and they make what the business is. That's why most of the refugees, they are coming here to see if at least they can earn something to sustain their families.
Uganda hosts more than 1.8 million refugees, the highest number in Africa. But with humanitarian aid shrinking and global attention fading, many refugees are finding new ways to survive and even thrive without waiting for help.
Uganda is known for its open-door refugee policy, but it's mainly designed for rural settlements, non-cities like this one. Urban refugees face new challenges: rent, school fees, healthcare, with little or no support. Yet many say the freedom here is worth it.
Authorities say more and more refugees are settling in urban areas, quietly changing the face of displacement.
The challenge that urban refugees in Kampala and also nationals face is that their livelihoods are challenged because they come from foreign countries. They can't set up businesses that easily, they can't easily get a job, they have language barriers. So we are trying to address some of these challenges that they face so that they can be economically productive. They can engage in business, they can pay taxes to the government, they can be able to meet their needs.
For Celia, this job is just enough to support her younger siblings and parents, all of them refugees too, but it also has its challenges.
Regardless of how much you can do, regardless of the skills you have, they're always going to undermine you because of your age. But also being a refugee, there is a way we are looked at as refugees, like as if we are not part of them. We are from a different place.
Celia's story is about quiet resilience.
All right, there you have it. The time is 14 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock. And, of course, we are listening to Early Morning Scoop. We might take a listen to a very short commercial break. Then once we return, we'll take you through the other international news stories.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today. Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make...
Right, welcome back. Now, to move on to the next item is that in Ungata, for example, the gold field mining company uses civilians' drones to monitor illegal mining at its Atuaka gold mine in the country's southwest. We might take a listen.
Gold prices have meant that gold miners in West Africa must now spend more to protect the precious commodity. There has been a surge in illegal mining operations made worse by high unemployment in the region. David Mbithi now looks at the situation in Ghana.
The new way to monitor illegal gold mining in Ghana, a surveillance drone. This one operated by Goldfields Mine staff across the expansive Takwa gold mine in the southwestern part of the country.
The drone is a faster way and it has a faster coverage. So you could use a few minutes to fly a drone over the whole concession. But if you would want to go physically, that would mean the use of fuel and human resource and going around all the mine. So the drones and tech has been very helpful in fighting crime on the mine.
The reason why surveillance must be deployed on air and on the ground, the rising price of gold, now sitting above $3,000 per ounce, has meant the reward outweighs the risk for City Power to these illegal miners, and sometimes confrontations with law enforcement ensues.
Illegal mining, now it has become a national issue. Yeah, so it's not peculiar to go for Takwa mine alone. It's a broader conversation out there. For us here, it is an issue to us as the security department and as a mine But in our own way, we have our own ways of trying to handle the these illegal mining issues. But it's a security concern to both the mine and the security department as well. So we try as much to have 24-hour surveillance on our concessions and all the illegal.
In West Africa, 3 to 5 million people depend on unregulated mining, accounting for approximately 30% of its gold production. Known in Ghana as Galamsey, it serves as an economic lifeline in areas with limited formal employment opportunities.
Ken, you know, in the olden days, or let's say in years past, where there wasn't any aerial view or any AI, you just go by word of mouth. You get people to tell you, oh, there's illegal mining happening here, and before the task force get there, there's no one there. So with this, we're able to get precision, like point blank, the location and the precise location of all these illegalities.
Ghana's major corporate miners have intensified their campaign for military protection at mining sites this year. According to two mining executives who are part of negotiations, Ghanaian authorities want miners to cover deployment costs estimated at $18,000 daily for a contingent of under 50 personnel.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to South Africa, is that the electricity minister, Ramakgopa, has now confirmed a major financial breakthrough. Now, City Power and Eskom has now reached a 3.2 billion debt rand settlement deal. Now, the agreement means that Johannesburg now utility will now repay the debt over the next 4 years. We might take a listen.
The 3.2 billion debt comes after Eskom issued a notice in November threatening to cut power supply to Johannesburg residents. The settlement was reached following a mediation process after a court instructed both parties to resolve the payment dispute. Minister of Electricity and Energy says the two parties have finally reached common ground.
City Power, they will pay the 3.2 billion rands over a period of 4 years. So it's important that there's an appreciation that this is a big ticket of 3.2 billion rands. Of course, that is that amount has been in dispute, and City Power, I want to emphasize, and City of Johannesburg have done everything possible to maintain paying the current account. Despite all these difficulties, of course, there will be challenges from 1 month to the other, but the issue, the one in dispute, they remained in dispute until we resolve this matter. So
the city had refused to pay the initial 4.9 billion debt, claiming it has been overcharged. Electricity minister then wrote off a substantial part of the debt as part of the agreement.
We've been able to write off that 880 million, and that comes as a result of first, they don't have to pay an interest on what that which is being owed. I've made the point that Eskom has considered with regards to the periods of load shedding, the estimations, and also the penalties that have to do with notifiable maximum demand. So all of those have been removed.
The city believes that improvements to its billing system will boost collections and reduce the number of complaints.
Then we've done the data update, Mr. Mayor, in terms of the billing process to make sure that we tighten the collection from the billing system and that the bill is correct, reduce the number of queries so that people who are able to afford to pay can pay. And of course, we've taken some decision in terms of where the bill should go.
City Power has responded to residents' concerns over possible overcharging.
When we then installed the new meters, it meant that we will then have to recover the basic charges of the previous months. So this has happened for a number of customers. We will continue to issue communication around that. We will engage with the affected customers. But if you have not paid the 200 rand in the other 6 months, for 2024, it means when you then buy your tokens in 2025, we then recoup that money.
Electricity Minister added that stressing the rising cost of electricity remains one of his top priorities. Lerato Makula, SABC News.
All right, the time is 22 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to Nigeria, is that with the Strikes are targeting major cities and, of course, airports are closed. Hundreds of Nigerians remain stranded in higher-risk areas, causing a growing concern among families at home. Now, the evacuation plans are underway with Nigerian's embassies in both capital coordinating efforts with international partners.
Citizens out of harm's way as hostilities escalate between Israel and Iran, with airstrikes hitting major cities and airports shut in both Israel and Iran. Hundreds of Nigerians are now stuck in high-risk zones while their families back home anxiously await a word on them. CGTN's Kelechi Mekalam has more.
I hope you guys
Egypt has launched a national...
Okay.
For Abuja-based engineer Abdullahi Mohammed, the crisis is personal. His 19-year-old niece left for Tehran last year to study engineering. Now, with missiles striking the Iranian capital, her safety is all that matters. He's relieved the Nigerian government is stepping in.
We heard that they say they want to evacuate people from Iran and Israel. So it's a very good move. They should go ahead and do that.
Evacuation plans are underway, with Nigerian embassies in Tel Aviv and Tehran working with partners. But with airports closed, many in Iran, including over 200 Nigerian students, may have to leave by road through Armenia.
We are doing everything possible to ensure that our citizens are not imperiled. We have put in initiatives in place to ensure that they are safely evacuated from conflict areas and to bring them back safely to their home country, which is Nigeria.
Some say the move is late. Many countries have already evacuated their citizens by air and by road. Security experts say Nigeria must do better at preparing ahead of time.
It is most unfortunate that we don't appear to be proactive enough as a nation. I mean, talking about Nigeria, even in our own internal security system, we have not been proactive enough. I hope that we will learn from these countries how to prioritize the safety and security of our citizens.
Nigerian authorities say they're working with foreign governments to secure safe passage for citizens caught in conflict zones. But with many still unaccounted for and communication disrupted in parts of Iran, tracking and verifying the location of all nationals remains one of the toughest parts of the evacuation.
In Iran, embassy staff continue remote coordination due to ongoing strikes. And in Israel, citizens are advised to register as land exits open. For families like Abdullahi's, the wait for safe return feels.
All right. The time is 25 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning skip. Now, in Egypt, Egypt launched a national campaign to raise awareness about the dangers of single-use plastic bags, reinforcing its commitment to reducing plastic waste. Now, this the initiative partners with social enterprises like Bantulastic, which now support the efforts through community outreach, Nabich Clean Up, and also Alexandra, and the education also on the environmental harm caused by the plastic bags. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Awareness campaign against single-use plastic bags. The campaign underscores the government's commitment to reducing plastic use and is working with social enterprises to involve communities in the country's green transition. CGTN's Yasser Hakim has more.
Egypt is one of the major sources of land and marine plastic pollution in the Middle East, which raises a lot of concern about its environmental hazards.
Plastic is a non-degradable material made from petroleum products that remains in the environment for hundreds of years. Microplastics in food cause multiple health issues for humans. The effect on marine life is as significant. Fish mistake plastics for food and get entangled in it, causing injury or death. It definitely endangers marine life and can cause the extinction of some fish species.
According to official statistics, Egyptians consume an average of 5 million tons of plastic products per year, the highest in the region. Plastic waste accounts for 14% of about 27 million tons of total waste in the North African country. In addition, the cost of importing plastic raw material takes over $20 million from the state budget annually. This is why the Environment Ministry has launched the Reduce It campaign in coordination with the private sector to eradicate the use of plastic bags.
The campaign aims to be implemented in different hypermarkets with the youth, with the different experts, in order to raise the awareness on the harms of the plastic bag, the single-use plastic bag, what can be done in order to reduce that, as well as a free distribution of the alternative to the single-use plastic bag.
One of the active social institutions working on this goal is called Banlastic. They lead initiatives that complement state efforts, including cleaning up beaches in Alexandria and creating awareness of the harmful effects of plastic bags.
We regularly do beach cleanups. We organize workshops for youth and support green startups. We use art to promote environmental awareness. We also began developing products that can replace plastics, like eco-friendly bags and biodegradable wood and silverware, and other recyclable products.
The government has also taken steps to discourage the production of plastic bags.
In order to do that, we need to have a law that would ban or at least reduce the use of the single-use plastic bags. So this was in the law in 2020. If you're going to have a factory for the single-use plastic bag, you're not getting any privileges from the investment law.
One alarming state statistics shows that the number of plastic products in the Mediterranean Sea will exceed the number of fish by 2050. Prompting immediate action to avert a marine environmental catastrophe on Egypt's shores. Yes, Hakim for CGTN.
Omutiha wutekirwa kabuna I matina omjo. Chikao shafa sana nana longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anageshifa ya Namibia ompitombwa na wa olonjika.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Right, the time is 30 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the oil prices have now fallen sharply on Tuesday, now to their lowest in more than a week. Now, this followed Israel and Iran agreeing to a fragile ceasefire, which was now immediately breached by Israel. Now, US President Donald Trump has now since been posting messages on social media urging both sides to stick to their ceasefire, and in unprecedented fashion reprimanded Israel for its violating a contract. Now, the Brent crude oil prices has now fallen by over $14 since yesterday's high. We might take a listen to this discussion.
Crude oil traded as low as $67 a barrel today. This after breaching through $81 a barrel in yesterday's trade, when market players waited to see how Iran would react to the U.S.'s attacks on its nuclear facilities over the weekend. Iran chose to perform a symbolic retaliation, wherein it first warned the United States and Qatar that it would make an assault on the U.S.'s military bases in Qatar, giving them ample time to evacuate any personnel. Subsequently, Trump tweeted indicating that there had been an agreement to a ceasefire between Israel and Iran, giving timelines for the ceasefire with an expectation that the 12-day war would be over within 24 hours of the ceasefire agreement.
To think that this whole 12-day war triggered most of this high volatility when it comes to oil prices. I mean, just yesterday, Brent crude was almost within $10 range, which is huge because this is the wildest since July 2022. So I think for now, because there have not been any disruptions when it comes to oil supply, so markets are currently cheering all that.
Market players are holding thumbs for a lasting truce to avoid a wide-ranging conflict in the Middle East that would likely destabilize the oil price and therefore economic global prospects. But even as investors digest the latest calm, there are other issues for them to grapple with on the horizon.
The big elephant in the room still remains. Remember, we've got almost 2 weeks to go, you know, when it comes to the deadline of tariffs. So that's another thing. But yes, as it stands now, we think the guys cannot afford to continue the way they've been continuing. And we've seen the likes of Israel have been getting most of the help coming from the U.S. So I think in a way, they're bound to listen to the U.S. indirectly also.
Market players are now turning their attention to U.S. Fed Chair Jerome Powell's testimony to Congress, which is set to take place this week, focusing on monetary policy. Meanwhile, the local JSE market traded in positive territory today, although the resources counters were in the red, with the local currency also firming, trading around 17.72 against the US dollar, ahead of the market's close.
All right. And lastly, on the international segment is that the global challenge will now dominate the G20 meeting. And that's according to the chair of Supreme Audit Institutions of this year, 2025. We might take a listen.
20 are primarily centered on two critical themes, infrastructure development and skills development. South Africa's Auditor General Tsakani Maluleke says these areas are fundamental to unlocking economic growth and improving the living conditions of citizens worldwide, particularly within developing nations. She says Supreme Audit Institutions are vital in overseeing government spending and influencing key decision makers in governments to optimize the use of public resources.
SIs are not just good for reporting after the fact on historical information. They also serve as indispensable sources of strategic foresight, insight, and they enable appropriate, optimal, effective, quality decision-making by those that run our respective governments. In particular, we've managed to highlight how the unique mandate, the capabilities, and the vantage point that we have as Supreme Audit Institutions position us to support our nations in addressing the key stumbling blocks to progress. These themes of infrastructure and skills development, along with the challenges and indeed opportunities that relate to them, have featured consistently and prominently on the agenda of the G20 since it began.
Deputy Finance Minister David Masondo says Supreme Audit Institutions play a crucial role in helping to mobilize funding for infrastructure through the audit reports they produce.
Building institutions is quite critical, and part of building institutions is building institutions that hold government entities and government as a whole accountable to make sure that there's transparency insofar as our public finances are concerned, insofar as how we're raising revenue and how we're accounting for the revenue that we generate from the public, from businesses. And as you always know, that there's always some shortfalls in our public finances and the needs are so huge. We go
Omudiha wutekirwa kaguna ii Madina omjo. Chikawa shafaa sana nana longe shifaa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongo tisa mwene. Anage shifaa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randito mwa yoe yonge shifaa yoe kupitira mo Igelefe Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma kodara hitatu imu. Datundatu heari hamano tano onia.
And callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news.
Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekiro kaguna I Madina omjo. Chikawa shafasa na nana longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongo tisamwene. Anage shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seisa nina omayaguro nirandi toma yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yo mo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma onorahe tatu imu.
Right, the time is 40 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. We apologize we had a little technical error there, so sorry for that. And now everything seems to be very good, and I hope we will be okay until we are done. So now to start off locally, want to start with one of the lead story in our today's edition. Please not forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, that is Eagle Media House, so that we can able to go through our today's edition. To start off is that the regulators in the fishing industry have now observed international pilchard bycatch affecting the recovery of the stock species. Now, this was revealed in the parliament by the Minister of Agriculture, Land Reform and Fisheries, NG Zamani, on the outcome of the survey that they conducted also in response to illegal fishing. Now, the the increase is in pilchard now ranging offers reasonable ground to suggest that this bycatch might not always be an international, but also rather a deliberate act. That what, as she said this directly impacts the recovery efforts for the pilchard species. And of course, we have communicated this to the fishing industry. That what as she said. Now, currently, pilchard stock is estimated at 850,000 metric tons, are still below the 1 million metric ton target, which is a significantly sustainable spanner biomass target. Now, a recent survey by the government revealed. Now, the biomass is the total weight of the sexual mature fish in the population that are capable of reproduction, and a key indicator of a fish stock reproductive potential, which now indicates the stock ability to replenish. And now this, Zamani stated that on a board observers, when they observed increased volume of pilchard bycatch, they now direct vessels to relocate to alternative fishing grounds. And of course, those directives have been now compiled with. Now, however, despite the minister's efforts, a notable number of vessels catching a pilchard persists across various areas, now which now underscores the the bycatch management, that what she noted. Now she revealed that even though their recent surveys shows a positive recovery trend in the pictured biomass, they are still below the needed level. Please do not forget to catch up the full story from our, or that by our WhatsApp channel, or please, the WhatsApp channel, it's Eagle Media House, just to catch up that full story. And not just that one, but of course the today's edition is already out even. So while it's early, please, it's also good just to follow today's edition. And to move on to the next item is that the statistic from 1st January to 4th June 2025 shows that road accidents involving pedestrians rose from 435 to 501, injuries from 406 to 464, and deaths from 60 to 87. That is now indicating the 45% increase in fatalities compared to the same period in 2024. Now, the Motor Vehicles Accidents Fund last week raised alarm over a significant increase in pedestrians-related crashes, injuries, and, of course, fatalities across Namibia. Now, according to the MVA Fund's Chief Executive Officer, Rosaria Maltens-Hausiku, the country is facing a preventable loss of life that requires immediate corrective intervention. Now, among the 87 lives lost were children, elderly citizens, and the working adults, are now ordinary people, now simply trying to go about their daily lives. Now, one of those cases is now that of 9-year-old Maltena, a grade 3 learner from the Zambezi region, who was now stuck and killed while crossing the road. Now, her story, Mania, mirror that of many others, reflecting the vulnerability of pedestrians on Namibian's road. Now, on this, my colleague Petra Mashela Lukolo spoke with a senior accident and injury prevention officer at the MVA Fund, that is Kaume Itumba. We might take a listen to their conversation.
As we are busy looking back onto our morning scoop, we are looking at the Chief Executive Officer of MV Fund, Rosalia Hausiku, stated that the rise in pedestrian-related crashes, injuries and fatalities across the country between 1st January and the 4th of June 2025 is concerning. Complete crashes data shows that pedestrian-related crashes increased from 435 to 501, and injuries increased from 406 to 464, and the fatalities arose from 60 to 87 in comparison to the same period in 2024. So, however, on this, we are going to be speaking to the senior accident and injury prevention officer at the MVA Fund, that is Mr. Kaume Itumba. Good morning, Mr. Kaume.
Yes, good morning, my dear. How are you?
I'm very fine.
Great.
Okay, as the senior accident and injury prevention officer of MVA Fund, what do you believe contributes to the increase in pedestrian involvement in crashes?
Yeah, there are different factors that causing these pedestrian crashes. This explosive of it's including alcohol, and maybe most of the time people are wearing clothes that are not reflective, mm-hmm. that are not having lights that people can, maybe the driver can see it. Most during the night you will find the person crossing the road, mm-hmm. but wearing the black dresses. Yeah. It is not reflective, so that is one can also cause the pedestrian to be overrun by vehicle, mm-hmm. crossing without checking properly. So we are still having people who are crossing the road. Some of them are even crossing the road while they are running. Mm-hmm. Some of them they are crossing without checking. Some of them they are not even crossing at the pedestrian crossing, even though mm-hmm. there are some places where the pedestrian, they are pedestrian crossing. Mm-hmm. So drivers' inability also, for instance, some drivers, they are also driving under the influence of alcohol. They are not respecting the road signs. Mm-hmm. And then we have also that happens mostly even at the shebeen that you put to the road on the middle, the shebeen on this side and on the other side, and also at the side of the the school. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that might be people to be overrun by vehicles, mm-hmm. and some of them, the people, they are not even checking well. So that's why we are always going out and community engagement, even at the bus terminal, roading terminal, and tax ranks, and also engaging the passengers on the road. So we actually do those activations so that we can reduce the crashes.
Okay, and a country with a high number of accidents may create a negative image of tourism, which could impact our economy. What measures do you think can be taken to reduce pedestrian crashes and overall just accidents?
So actually we say the road safety is a shared responsibility. I play my part, and if I'm displaying his part, and you and the other person playing, all of us, mm-hmm. we are supposed to do what is right to save life. So it should not be just the role of the police officers, the role of the aviation, or the role of the road authority or other stakeholders, but all of us, mm-hmm. we should do what is right to save life, mm-hmm. Something that can be, that can prevent this road crash, because drivers who are driving at the high speeds, that can also cause the accident. And the headlamps of our vehicles should be on all the time. So we are saying that at least if maybe our country can just, every person can change his mindset, so that people, when they are traveling to our country, they will not say, we are going to the country where I can lose my life and so forth. So that is the way that maybe we can prevent and maybe encourage tourists to come. Because imagine if tourists are not coming, the impact on the economy will also decrease and go down. Yeah. And the country depends on the economy. So we should just at least do what is important, mm-hmm. and what is right on the road to reduce road crash, so that that can impress impress our road safety. Mm-hmm. So even people are coming here, they will not see, they should feel safe,
yes.
so that they can travel on our public road without might be road crashes or might be injury and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Before we just close off our interview, Mr. Kaume, maybe just specifically to especially those pedestrians or motorists or bicycle riders, what advice could you give to these people so that we can just reduce the number of accidents that are happening, especially on pedestrians?
Especially, we can say when we are traveling, we should also maybe plan our journey so that we can be resting enough. Because some of these people, they are even just losing their concentration because, and they will overrun pedestrians. And so pedestrians should also wear maybe reflective jackets, mm-hmm. so that they can be seen at a distance.
Yeah.
So people should at least respect the traffic road sign, mm-hmm. and the speed of, we should stick to the prescribed speed, 120, and in town is 60, but you will find the person driving 120 in town. So, we should always be responsible when we are on the road, so that we can also reduce these, crashes, and then in case of any road crash, the number to call is 9682. That's the number to call. Before you call your doctor, or maybe the doctor from your house, before you call the nurse or the police, mm-hmm. call 9682 so that all the services can be sent at the scene of accident at the same time, mm-hmm. and the treatment of that particular victim can start from the point of accident.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number to call. So everybody should be responsible. Let's all care. Let's all be responsible on our road, mm-hmm. whether a pedestrian or maybe a cyclist or maybe anybody, we should just take things to our minds that If we are doing what is right, then we will save life and then we will reduce those accidents or those crashes on our road.
All right. Okay, that was the Senior Accident and Injury Prevention Officer, Mr. Kaume Itumba. He's just saying that we should be cautious when it comes to being on the road, whether you are a driver or a pedestrian or a motor rider. Please be safe. We should look out and to the pedestrians and motor riders. I believe you should wear reflectors so that you are just able to be seen in the dark. Thank you very much, Mr. Kaume.
Thank you very much, madam. Thank you. Keep it up and then be
All right. There you have it. The time is 53 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Zambia's acquisition of a 26% stake in Angola Baguela oil refinery marks a very powerful shift toward the kind of intra-African collaboration the continent desperately needs. Now, to explain what lesson Namibia can learn from this, my colleague David Chombe engaged with Triana Shulula, an economist and, of course, entrepreneur. We might take a listen.
We are looking at oil and the economic integration of African continent and also new development, especially when Zambia acquired 26% stake in Angola Benguela oil refinery, which marks a strong and strategic development in SADC and also in the African continent, looking at investment and also how oil will change the development of Africa. Then, looking at the Angolan context, now we are asking ourselves a question to say, why can't Namibia follow this example? What is wrong with Angola oil? What are some of agreements on the table, and how can this opportunity can make it easier, particularly looking at the price of oil, which is going up every day and taking pressure off the government. So we got into the conversation with Triano Shurula. He's an economist and he's also an entrepreneur, just to assist us to unpack this. Triano, good morning, and how are you doing today?
Yes, morning, sir. How are you, David?
Well, let us looking at Namibia oil price, which continue to increase year after year, while there are deals on the table and continuation of the increment of the oil price, is pressuring the government to subsidize rather than just focusing on other projects. Now, looking at what have happened in Zambia, what is so difficult for Namibia to utilize Angolan oil, in your understanding?
Okay, basically what I believe is when it comes to oil, oil is a very critical or crucial topic to any economy as it drives the economy at large.
Yeah.
The thing is with the Angola oil, like the oil that you mentioned from Angola.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we have different types of oils. We have leaded and unleaded, maybe petrol.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we as Namibians, we believe that the oil from Angola is not now, it's not of the same quality as the one that we have locally.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why maybe when we experience breakdowns in our vehicles, when you use that type of fuel,
yeah,
we suffer maintenance costs, especially when it comes to vehicles, just because now of the different types of oils. If you are using like the local one that you've been already using and you introduce the other one, there will always be some repairs or maintenances that need to be done regularly on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think it's right to invest in refining them as Zambia is also doing? Because, you know, it stated that Namibia was also offered a stake in Lobito refinery by Angola, just like Zambia. But, you know, that deal failed to materialize, or Namibia failed to utilize that offer. What is your take on this?
Okay. Let me take you back to late last year, I think on the 13th of December.
Yeah.
There is a Parates executive.
Yeah.
The group executive for Parates Africa is Bunny Hams. Yeah, he actually wrote an article about the oil case and Namibia's critical crossroads. In this article, he explained the need for substantial investment, social infrastructure, housing, and also maybe, and also sanitation as well as healthcare.
Yeah.
Shortages and, and shortages of electricity.
Yeah.
And we, where he mentioned that the oil boom that may simply not translate into improved living conditions of the majority of the population.
Yeah.
But now these guys that are advising like this, they are not Namibians. Mm-hmm. Or maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure if he's Namibian or not, but I'm sure that the way he's reasoning is reasoning in a perspective as if he does not support the oil economy, which is why we are taking advice from people that are not locally, for instance. Mm-hmm. Some people are not Namibians. They are telling us how to run our economy, which I don't think is a fair fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, when you are looking at that, don't you think it's the right time now to rethink the way we think about oil and also to adjust ourselves to the sector, like on the ground of assisting, you know, our neighbor Angola? Because the same companies which are here in Namibia, if you look at Total Energy, look at Chevron, are the same companies which are operating there. Then why it's so difficult for us to look at something which can also assist our economy? If they are not good, why can't we assist in refining them like what Zambia is investing in now?
Okay. I just believe that for countries like Zambia,
yeah,
they are doing something for the greatness of their people.
Yeah.
But you have economies like us.
Yeah.
Our economy, for instance, where people actually just consider for their own profits or short-term profits.
Hmm.
Well, Zambia, the decision that they made will actually benefit Zambia for the next 50, maybe 100 years.
Yeah.
Nobody, based on the projections.
Yeah.
But we as local people, normally we would, we have specific individuals who actually interfere in these things.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why oil has like holds the majority or is a major player when it comes to foreign exchange, for instance, if they are maybe producing oil and exporting. And the thing is, when it comes to now the wealth that will be generated from the oil sector, if it's not maybe taken now into account or distributed fairly within the economy,
yeah,
that is when now you actually make use of the profits that you are generating to enhance now this infrastructure, so education as well as sanitation, electricity, as well as roads. If we are not now using that for those profits to actually enhance or do actually invest in this type of activities, this will actually leave our like our local people to live in extreme poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which will be the future of the country. Let me say Namibia will be in poverty or suffering high oil prices for the next 50 years, but Zambia probably just from next year or then in the 5 years time, they will already be benefiting from the shares that they bought from Angola.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a business person or as an entrepreneur to say, how is oil affect the operation of your business?
Okay. Let me say, now we are actually experiencing high freight charges.
Yeah.
Back then, okay, because sometimes I would expect for parcels or I would send items from Windhoek to where I am operating from.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe let me say from Northern Industry to somewhere in Katutura or maybe in the suburbs.
Yeah.
The rates have actually went up recently, drastically, if I might say.
Mm.
So we are suffering a lot. This type of charges now, they actually reduce now taxable income that I'm actually supposed to pay to the government in the end.
Yeah.
Because in the end, I will just, because most of the profits that I would have made will be absorbed in this type of transactions.
Yeah. Just final, what do you think need to be done? Apart from what we have discussed already, what do you think need to be done for us to make sure that we make bold decisions, not based on middlemen like what people are discussing, either in oil industry, either in energy industry, because this is some of the criticism have been, you know, stated, particularly when you talk about oil. There's always somebody who is the middle when you talk about issues of energy. These are some of the things, like, that's the topic of another day, is to say we are the highest in terms of expensiveness of electricity in SADC region. What do you really think need to be done to cut out these, you know, unnecessary barriers to our achievement?
Okay, because one thing when it comes to logistics,
yeah,
cutting out or taking out the middleman does not necessarily or entirely eliminate the function that the middleman was supposed to contribute or was supposed to do.
Mm.
So, like at this stage, since we have a lot of projects that are now underway regarding the oil, as we are drilling in the sea as well.
Yeah.
This is the proper time where we actually send kids to school.
Yeah.
To give them proper education.
Yeah.
Whether scientists or if we need people, that are doing, let me say maintenance works at the boilers, we get ourselves, high-end boilers. Maybe sending them to school to Europe or wherever.
Yeah.
So that should we be able to have our own refineries at some point, then these people can take over.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe the reason why we have middlemen right now is because we don't entirely understand the whole process.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Tirano Surura, thank you very much for joining us this morning and thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you.
All right, the time is 4 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock and this early morning scoop. We'll take a very short commercial break, then once return, we'll take you through the next item, on looking at the local, news updates.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha, utekiru wakaguna, ii matina.
Right, it's 7 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock and this is early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that we want to speak or rather dive into the conversation of the aquaculture, whereas Johannes Shuya, known as Ndinalago and aquaculture farmer residing in Otapi, celebrated a successful harvest of approximately 4.5 fish from his pond last Friday, marking an improvement compared to last year's yield. Now, Michael, colleague Pati Moshara Lukolo engaged with him to share his story. We might take a lesson.
So we are looking back to our morning scoop. We are here at the aquaculture in Namibia. Aquaculture in Namibia is an emerging industry that includes both freshwater and marine components. It is recognized as a priority for development in national initiatives such as Vision 2030 and the National Development Plan. Inland aquaculture, primarily located in the Caprivi, Okavango, Omusati, Kunene and Oshana regions, mainly focuses on farming for the tilapia catfish. However, many Namibians are hesitant to venture into the aquaculture. Today, here we are going to be speaking to Mr. Johannes Shuya, who is a farmer in the aquaculture. So he will be elaborating for us how it is, how it has been for him in the aquaculture. Good morning, Mr. Johannes Shuya.
Morning. How are you?
I am very fine.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Johannes Shuya, before we just dive into our discussion, could you share what inspired you to pursue aquaculture and provide a brief overview of your progress?
It started last year. It started 2023.
All right.
Because I'm residing in Ombajele, mm-hmm. a village called Ombajele, just 1 kilo from Utapi.
Okay.
What I saw was just my neighbor, he's having a big pond at his house, mm-hmm. and then he's farming catfish. And then last of last year, 2023, mm-hmm. He was harvesting catfish. And I'm like, because I'm also residing alongside the canal, mm-hmm. and he's also residing alongside the canal. So I decided no. And then we went there for harvesting day. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2023. And then I got the idea, since I'm also close to the canal, and I'm also not just doing aquaculture, I'm also doing crop farming. I have a garden called Dinelago Vegetable, just here from Bajele. So I decided, why not dig also a pond behind my house and start aquaculture. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, why do you think many people are not venturing into the aquaculture? Is it due to the challenges of maintaining the fish, or what are the other reasons?
No, aquaculture, I think it's just number one is water. Water mm-hmm. is one of the limitation. But if you are close to water, you can start aquaculture. Mm-hmm. And then with aquaculture, another requirement that you must is you must make sure that you have enough feed for the fish, because fish, mm-hmm. they like to eat, you know. You just make sure you have enough food mm-hmm. for them to eat, because like this fish that we are going to harvest today, mm-hmm. we started with them, I think, in January this year. So they have to stay in the pond for 6 months. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And after 6 months, then you can now call the Minister of Agriculture, because we are working in collaboration with the Minister of Fishery, the one in Onavivi. So they have to come and observe and check, you know, how your fish have grown and, you know, all that. And then now they have to give you a recommendation that, no, if you are ready to harvest, you know, you can set up a date, and then they can help you. They bring along the nets, mm-hmm. and then all the logistics, and then you process your harvest. Yeah.
Okay. You spoke of having enough seeds. What type of seeds are we talking about, and how many times do you feed this fish a day?
Okay, I'm not really aware of the feeds, how they make them, because we usually just buy them from the Minister of Fishery.
Right. Yeah,
they come in 50 bags, mm-hmm. you know. So they look like dog foods, you know how dog
mm-hmm.
foods look
yes,
like?
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
They kind of look like something like that. So, mm-hmm. and I don't know how what components they use to make that feed.
Okay.
But, is that one, you buy them at the Minister of Fishery, mm-hmm. and then with fish, mm-hmm. when you are starting, I think you should start feeding them 3 times a day. In mm-hmm. the morning, around maybe 9, mm-hmm. 10 there, mm-hmm. and then in the afternoon, around 2 there, mm-hmm. in the evening, around like 5 there, depends, you know. And then as long as you go, mm-hmm. you will start picking, like when they are eating, but when you throw the food in the pond,
mm-hmm.
you see, you know, they'll start reacting, you know, they'll start reacting.
Mm-hmm.
If they are reacting that they're eating fast, then you have to be feeding fast.
Mm-hmm.
If they are eating slow, then you also have to be, you know, feeding slow.
So okay.
It depends. Yeah, it also depends on the weather. Whether it's, if it, like now it's winter time, you know, fish doesn't like really eat winter time, you know,
mm-hmm.
it affected. Yeah, sometimes they are kind of.
Okay. Okay. What type of fish do you grow in your pond, and why did you choose the particular species?
Okay. For now, I started with catfish.
Uh-huh.
Catfish. I started with catfish because my pond. I did not cover it with that black plastic. You know, the pond usually the requirement you must cover it with the black plastic. You know, underneath. Oh. But that plastic is also expensive. When I did a quotation, mm-hmm. it was around 45,000. So I decided no. Let me just start small. Mm-hmm. For now, we just have the pond, and then catfish. For starting, I was advised that if you are starting fish farming, start first with catfish. As you go, then you can now expand to tilapia and other type of fish, you know. So, for now, I'm focusing on catfish.
Mm-hmm.
And, so far this year, like our harvest, mm-hmm. It's enormous. It's very, very, our fish are very big, you know. Even mm-hmm. the people from the Ministry of Fishery, when they came, they were like surprised because mm-hmm. they really encouraged me that, no, I have done a good job. Because mm-hmm. last year, our harvest was not really good. Since it were just starting out,
mm-hmm.
The experience was not there. Even my workers, they were not feeding the fish like on time.
Okay.
So, but now at least we are having a good harvest this year.
Okay, so you have said you'll be harvesting. How does the market look for you? How does the market look for your fish? Do you encounter difficulties selling your products, or
no,
is it manageable?
As I'm talking now, people from Windhoek, the cars are already here at my house.
Uh-huh.
They are just waiting for the people from the Ministry of Fishery.
Uh-huh.
And then we go in the pond, we harvest,
uh-huh.
and then we put on the scale.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start now putting on the prices.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, as I'm talking now, the market, people are flocking. Some from Moshakati, some from Ondangwa, some are even traveling to Windhoek today. They are already here waiting. They are already there. Their cars are already parked here waiting for us to mm-hmm. do the harvest, and then they carry their fish along to Windhoek.
All right. What message do you have for other farmers out there to engage in the aquaculture?
No, let's start aquaculture, because if you are along the canal, if you are close to water, just
mm-hmm.
start aquaculture. I will encourage, you know, so as, like my pond is very small. I want even to expand to have even two or three ponds in my house, you
mm-hmm.
see. Because this is not enough, you know. Some people are even far away calling, like yesterday I was receiving a lot of calls, you know, because
mm-hmm.
when we advertise that we are harvesting today, people are, some even paid already, they're sending e-wallets,
mm-hmm.
pay to sell, the one, their fish received already. Like
mm-hmm.
the first harvest that we are going to take now is already paid for. We are just going to now measure, you know, according to the prices of the people that among the people that they pay.
Alright. Okay, that was Johannes Shuya, a farmer in the Ombajele. That is in the Utapi. And for everybody, for every farmer out there, I believe that this is a message very loud and clear that if you are to engage in the aquaculture, it's a very possible thing as long as there is water available. That's all he said. And starting with the catfish, as I believe those are the fish that can adapt quickly. Thank you very much, Mr. Jonas.
All right, the time is 16 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, just to add on my colleague there, is that Ashuya also shared his inspiration to enter the aquaculture industry, saying that he have been also observing his neighbor prospering, or rather getting really a very good harvest every year, so that what really motivated him to start off, although his first harvest did not really turn out very well, although this year's harvest was the good one, that what he said, or rather was a successful one, although also with the challenges, of course, when you are an entrepreneur, when you are wanting to venture into a certain sector, or you want now to venture into this aquaculture industry. Of course, you would also want to wonder or want to know what challenges are within the sector itself. And of course, there we heard it from Shura that challenges are few, not that much, just saying that so long you have water, so long you have the feed for your fish, and of course, there you can able to start. Now, maybe starting should be also with catfish, where that he said it's more manageable, it's more adaptable than also tilapia fish, that you need to have a certain condition, maybe a plastic underneath for your fish to adapt in that condition. So now to move on to the next item is that yesterday, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah shared her remark on the occasion of the panel discussion on women in leadership, driving innovation, catalyzing investments, and shaping policy. Now, she indicated that the government cannot do much alone. That's why they are seeking partnership with the private sector now, both locally and internationally. Although he said that it seems to that there is a different mission between the private sector and, of course, the government. You might take a listen to what she has to say more.
We know very well as a government we will not be able to do this alone. Hence, we are seeking for partnership with the private sector, both locally and internationally. I know from the face of it, when you look at the private sector and the public sector, we might have different interests. But at the end of the day, we are serving the same people and we need the same people. As a government, it is our responsibility to make sure that the people's needs are met through the improvement of the quality service, and again to improve on the livelihood. But for the private sector, it's not a hidden fact that most of the time you are looking at making profit. However, what is encouraging to me, in interacting with the private sector, I came to realize that the private sector is fully aware that they will not be able to make maximum profit if there's no good labor relations. And labor relations only comes if there is a good understanding between the employer and the employee, instead of hostilities, which most of the time comes due to starving wages that are given to the employers. For us, we feel we must really try to strike a balance between the role of the private sector as well as the government. More particularly, when it comes to our ambition, the ambition of the state for development and for the market-led economy. And for us, this is in line with the Namibian constitution that talks about mixed economy. In other words, when we decide to aggressively reach out to the private sector, that is because our constitution directs us that in managing the Namibian economy, we are guided by the principle of mixed economy, where you have the public and the private sector equally taking part in the economy of the country. You are already informed as to what is Namibia, but I just want to remind you that Namibia is a country which has 824,292 square kilometers, with a population of 3.1 million Namibian people.
All right. Furthermore, with a population of 3 million people are there, Nandi-Ndaitwah emphasized that Namibia is not then a small population, indicating that we are also part of the SADC. You might take a lesson further.
Don't say this is a small population. We are not a village. We are part of SADC. We are part of Africa. We are part of the globe. However, we provide a good platform and a good space for you to flourish and make an impact in the world economy. And to meet this inspiration, we have policies and laws that make us to be open to foreign and local investment equal. For foreign investors, I must say, your space is more in the major industries, such as mineral extraction and value addition. Value addition is very fundamental because that's the only way we'll be able to grow our economy and create necessary jobs in our country. Thus also giving breathing space from your own countries not to have a number of migrants coming from our countries. Create jobs for them at home, and then they can only visit you as a choice, but not want to stay there. While the sectors of retail, among others, should be predominantly by the local investors, as that will give them a possibility to grow from being small business to become big entrepreneurs, whereby they can also join you in the major economic sectors, not only in Namibia, but I would also want to see Namibians also investing in other countries. But without the capacity, they will not be able to do that. So therefore, we have to make use of our resources to build the capacity of the local entrepreneurs, to build the capacity of our local business people, for them also to become international business players. Namibia's economy, as you all know by now, is very much mineral-based. And we have quite a number of the critical minerals which are needed, particularly now when we talk about technology revolution. I need not to mention all of them, because I know there is Mr. or Ms. Google who can give all the information anytime you need it. But I can tell you, we have rare earth minerals. We have also zinc. We have copper. We have lithium. We have iron ore. We have uranium. And that's why we are not afraid to make sure that we want to have uranium as part of our energy mix, because it's a strong energy which is very important for industrialization. I'm saying it to you. And recently, Namibia has also captured the attention of the world through the oil and gas discovery. And of course, the abundant nuclear, clear, renewable energy which we have. I'm sure for some times we'll come to be known as the sender of green hydrogen.
All right, there you had it from the President Nandi Ndaitwah. They're also emphasizing that the adding value should be a practice, whereas he said like that, I mean, she said that with the adding value to our product, of course, we had now to grow our economy. And of course, by growing our economy, we then have to create a job for our country. So now to move on to the next item, which might be the last item of the day, is that the Namibia will now be home to the Global African Hydrogen Summit once more from 9 to 11 September 2025, following the inaugural summit last year in Windhoek. Now, the 2025 summit kicks off with the press conference on Monday at the Avenue Hotel in Windhoek. Now, speaking at the launching press conference ahead of program at the Namibia Green Hydrogen Program, James Mnupe stated that last year the summit hosted over 1,484 people, which now included 500 registered delegates and 20 ministers and deputy ministers from around the world. Now, the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board, Executive of Talent, Innovation and Productivity, Julia Mututhana, revealed that the 2024 summit generated $3.5 million in direct economic activity for Namibia. Now, in that this year, over 1,500 delegates from 70 countries are expected to attend this summit. Now, the 2025 summit will now operate under the theme Ambitions in Action, fueling Africa's green industrial revolution. Now, Nupe also stated that the green hydrogen industry has now employed over 800 Namibians to date, and over $1.70 million has been shared with Namibians' SMEs to date. Now, he revealed that 183 scholarships have been awarded to youth in fields related to green hydrogen industry at universities, technical and vocational institutions. Now, another round of scholarship worth $25 million has been announced for July 2025 as well. Now, on that, the summit is organized by DMG Events, a UA-based event film. Now, the DMG Senior Vice President of Energy, Damien Howard, emphasized the importance of using this summit to empower the continent's youth. Now, if we are investing today for the energy of tomorrow, then we also need to invest today for the jobs of tomorrow. That starts with the youth. That was his remark. Now, Howard also revealed that last year's effort to integrate the youth into the summit did not also bear the designed outcome. Now, as a result of the 2025 summit, there will be dedicated two-day youth programs now for both local and international youth to gain transferable skills. Now, this program will now accommodate 200 members of the youth who will now be in attendance for free of charge. Now, we extended 100 invitation to the youth last year. We learned that to have the right youth there, we have now also to assemble a group of stakeholders to help us get the right youth at the table. That what he added. Thank you so much for staying with us on today's edition. And of course, the time is 30 minutes into the hour, 7 o'clock. And this was the Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much. And please do not forget to stay tuned for the next program. That is I'm Picking the Day with that day, Mike Oshovelli. Thank you so much and have yourself a great day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna ii matina omjo. Shikawa shafaa sana nana longe shifaa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moya o ota ingongo tisa mwene. Anage shifaa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nilanditoma yoe yonge shifaa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma onora heta tuimu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano o niyaji. Eagle FM.
the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.